in sports and in so many things, we only talk about the people who are there, right? People who are racing. It's so easy to be forgotten. And so it's going to be, I think, bittersweet for me being at the Olympics and watching the races and, you know, being excited for those who win and also just always thinking about those who weren't given the opportunity and aren't there.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, the history of sex testing. With the Summer Olympics in Paris upon us, reporter Rose Eveleth is looking back on the long history of sexual division in elite sports. Their new series, Tested, is a co-production of NPR's Embedded and the CBC. It took them to Africa and Europe and beyond, and deep into the annals of athletics.
I'm a sports nerd and a science journalist, and also someone who loves to crawl into a historical rabbit hole. And what I pretty quickly realized is that this story intersects with all of those things. Because it turns out that sports organizations have been on a century-long pursuit to find a singular, foolproof exam or test that can determine, without a doubt, whether an athlete is female.
And Rose joins us now. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
So I understand you've been interested in this topic for quite a while. What sparked your interest in the first place?
Well, I'm a sports nerd, as you just heard. I've always loved sports, played sports, and I'm also a science journalist. And I was an intern at Scientific American many years ago. I think it was 2012. And I was actually researching something different. I had been writing about advanced prosthetics. And I was researching this very interesting case of Oscar Pistorius, who at the time was in the news a lot because he was trying to race against able-bodied athletes. He's a double amputee. And the question was, like, does he have an unfair advantage because he's got these, you know, specialized blades for legs? And in doing that research, I came across this other story of Caster Semenya, who was a different South African runner who was also accused of having an unfair advantage for a very different reason. In 2009, she sort of burst onto the world stage, won a very dramatic race in Berlin, and people started saying things about her body and about her sex and that maybe she was somehow not really a woman, and that gave her this unfair advantage. And I remember just thinking, like, what? Like, what does that mean? Like, when people say that, like, what are they talking about? And I got kind of obsessed from there. And I've been sort of following the story since then, essentially. I, you know, had heard of Caster in 2009 when it happened, but I hadn't really dug deep until that moment in my internship as a wee baby science reporter at Scientific American.
Well, with respect to some of the athletes who are profiled in this series, can you help us understand the terms? Because I think a lot of people will have, you know, followed news stories about fights, about, you know, which kinds of competitions women can participate in and so on. But this isn't exactly, you know, the culture war question about trans people at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is a little confusing. And some argue, I think, that it has been intentionally muddied, perhaps. But there are the athletes that I'm following are not trans athletes. These are women who were assigned female at birth, have always been raised as girls, lived as women, have never, in fact, questioned their sex or gender until they were tested by, the organizing body, or tested by doctors as at the request of the organizing body for track and field. And, you know, the terminology can be confusing. There are some folks who use the word intersex. There are some folks who use the word DSD, which stands for differences of sex development. Some people say, you know, variations in sex biology. There's kind of a lot of different terms that people use here. And it just sort of means people who don't fall super, super neatly into the kind of sex biology that maybe we learned about in high school, right? The like X, 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 Y, all sort of lined up in a row in terms of your sex biology. And that variation, it's hard to pin down exactly how common it is. It sort of depends on how you define it. But some people estimate that people with sex variations defined broadly are about 1-2% of the population. So it's not incredibly rare.
And I know that this is the heart of the question you set out to answer, but who ultimately, like when we talk about the Olympics of this year or in years past, sort of gets to decide where the line is?
Yeah, the sporting bodies themselves get to decide where the line is. And they have been deciding where the line is since women were allowed to compete in the Olympics, in the early 1900s. Women on the track were not allowed onto the track until 1928 at the Olympics. And so there's the International Olympic Committee, the IOC. They run the Olympics. And then each sport has their federation. So World Athletics is the track and field federation, World Aquatics for swimming. You know, every sport has their own. And for a long time, the IOC and World Athletics were sort of in step with one another. They have diverged since around 2014, 2015. They've kind of diverged. But the sporting federations themselves get to decide. So different sports have different rules. World Athletics has rules that are different from, you know, gymnastics or soccer or, you know, these other organizations. And it makes it a little bit confusing, I think, sometimes because it's a bit hodgepodge. And it's, you know, enforcement is, you know, hard because it's there's lots of people who play sports. You know, there's lots of people around the world who have different rules. And so right now, there is a lot of variety, actually, in the rules and the line that is drawn between who gets to compete in the women's category, you know, with no restrictions and who has restrictions on their competition and their participation.
So for the athletes you focused on, what have been some of the implications of having been subjected to this sex testing?
Yeah, so right now the policy impacts some athletes with some kinds of sex variations, and they have been presented with this very difficult choice. Basically, their choice is they can choose to comply with the rules, which means that they will have to lower their naturally occurring testosterone level down to a set number. And to do that requires either, in some cases, surgery, in other cases, medication that has, you know, obviously known side effects that Castor has talked about at length. And if they don't want to do that, they can no longer compete at the elite level in the women's category. Now, the rules actually say that these women could technically compete in the male category, which I think many of them find quite offensive because they're not men. And also just practically, I mean, people talk about these women dominating and, you know, running these incredible times, but they would not be competitive in the male category. These are not, Castor does not even have the world record for the women in the 800 meters. Neither does Christine Boma, who I follow around for this series. So, you know, these are not women who are performing, you know, at male qualifying times.
So for the 1-2% of people who fall into this category, I mean, what would they do? Where should they compete?
I mean, this is where we get into opinion, right? Like, I believe that, you know, you should compete as the sex and gender that you are. I feel that is what is correct. Other folks think, no, you know, there should be some sort of line that we're drawing to kind of decide who can compete with restrictions, who can compete without restrictions, who can't compete at all. Right now, trans women cannot compete at all in track and field, according to World Athletics regulations. But this is where you get into, you know, these are rules that are decided by each sport. And it sort of gets into this sort of bigger question of what you think fairness is and what is fair to you. And I think that is, unfortunately, or fortunately, perhaps, depending on how you think about it, a subjective decision. I think a lot of people in this story really want this to be a science question, that like science is going to answer this for us. It's going to, you know, tell us exactly what to do. And science can tell you many things, but it actually can't tell you what is fair, right? It can't tell you what is right or just or, you know, equitable or all those things that we hope and, you know, wish that the world and sports could be. And so I think it's tough. You know, you hear different athletes reacting differently. Some of them decide to take the medication and try to play by the rules. Some of them have decided to fight and take the organizing body for track and field to court, the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Many of them have given up. I've heard stories about younger athletes being discouraged from entering into sports because they know, like the adults know, that they're going to run into these problems. And so we're sort of steering those athletes away from sports, which to me as a sports lover is really sad. So it's tough. It's a really tough question.
What will you be watching for with this reporting project now behind you in the Olympics?
Yeah, none of the athletes that I followed were able to make it to the Olympics. That is perhaps a mini spoiler for the show, but it's known. So I think it's hard. It's interesting to watch the Olympics knowing that these women who want to be there and by some rights should be there aren't going to be there. You know, I think in sports and in so many things, we only talk about the people who are there, right? People who are racing. It's so easy to be forgotten. And so it's going to be, I think, bittersweet for me being at the Olympics and watching the races and, you know, being excited for those who win and also just always thinking about those who weren't given the opportunity and aren't there.
We've been speaking with Rose Eveleth about the new series Tested, which is a collaboration between CBC and NPR's Embedded, and it's a special series. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, Rose, and thanks for your reporting.
Thank you, Ian.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.